Shayna, my dear.
Christopher.
You know how before the show starts, it's just the two of us?
Yes.
So I've been noticing that you've been a little tense when we've started our shows, and I wanted to tell you a joke to loosen you up a little bit before, you know, before the music starts.
Okay, go for it.
It's a knock-knock joke.
Oh, God.
You ready?
It's a stupid dad joke. Okay, ready? Go. Yeah.
Go ahead. You start.
Knock, knock. I start?
Who's there?
How the hell should I know? Hey, that was really stupid. Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
We are the podcast attempting to reclaim the social narrative, attempting to reclaim it, to free it from the binaries of politics and economics, which so dominate conversation in our public square, but which do little or nothing to highlight human thriving.
Yeah, we want to reanimate public thinking using the lenses of theology and moral philosophy. We invite you to subscribe to What in God's Name. Subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And do us a big favor. Help us out. Leave us one of those beautiful reviews. Shayna, before we get on with today's show, I know we both wanted to pause and acknowledge with sadness and shared grief the 10 people shot dead in Buffalo. Innocent people killed for the color of their skin.
Killed by another angry young white racist. I almost have no words. 72 hours in America over the course of one weekend in America, there were something in excess of 240 some odd people shot. 30 some odd, I believe, died. 72 hours in America. I remember Martin Luther King talking about our having lost our moral compass. There are days when it feels like it has just been ground to dust. And certainly Saturday was one of those days. It's not enough for us to send our thoughts and prayers to the people of Buffalo. What those of us who occur as Caucasian must do is begin to take on racism. Every place we see it, it must not be allowed to continue in our name. And I just don't know what else to say about it.
This is not the topic of today's show, but Shayna and I felt like we couldn't carry on without just stopping to acknowledge this bad news. It is bad news.
It is not disconnected from our topic today, but we'll get back around to that, I'm sure.
Indeed, it is not disconnected from it. So the darkness, I think it's just true to say, and our show is about telling the truth, the darkness out there is dark.
And if you're listening to this podcast and you are feeling a heaviness, just know that you're not alone. And try to remember that what follows the long dark night of the soul is sunrise, is daybreak.
I wanted to end our little moment by quoting the Reverend Denise Walden, who's executive director of Voice Buffalo. She said this, "I think we know that there's a need for comfort. There's a need for love in our community." And that was the word reminding people that we are still a strong community. Reminding those of us that live here that in spite of this heinous act that we've seen, this is still home. Words of hope from the Reverend Denise Walden. And good leadership, Shayna, just to say, hey, what happened was horrible, and we need to grieve together as a community, and this is still our home. We're here. And we need to stay connected. We have a spinny wheel. We give it a spin. It lands on one of 16 different core values or key ideas of our show. We like to start with a little randomness and playfulness. And I believe, Shana, you get to give this a spin. Great podcast material, the sound effect.
You know, I've decided that the spinny wheel is a spiritual practice that we engage in at the beginning of the show because the show is not scripted. It is a conversation. And so in some ways, it's just an opportunity for us to loosen up and kind of, you know, get the wheels in our heads loosened and lubricated. So what did we land on today?
Well, of course, you said the word that it landed on without knowing because you didn't look where it landed. Conversationology. It's the creative interplay of listening, taking in what the other says, and acknowledging that there is truth. And it's not my possession and it's not your possession, but it's something we can get closer to. We will never have it all, but we can get closer to it in conversation, in dialogue, in openness to the other.
Yeah, conversation is everything. And I mean, I'm not a relativist, but I sometimes have difficulty buying into the notion that there is a truth. I mean, there probably is about some things, but I think the truth is more likely to be found in conversation because to get to the whole truth, we must see it from all perspectives. And of course, you know, our own sight is limited by our own life's experience, et cetera, et cetera. So conversationology, the enriching conversation. How did you put it at the opening? You said reanimating our dialogue. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, thank you, because I did choose that word. Let's move on to today's show, Shana. We want to illuminate a tension that exists in liberal societies. And our hope is that you will learn something. My hope is that I will learn something, that Shana will learn something, that we will all learn something together. That will help you and us understand some of the deeper dynamics of our current political and psycho-spiritual cultural predicaments and problems. Mm. How'd you like that little hyphenated psycho-spiritual, cultural, political? I mean, they're all related.
I know, and you didn't interrupt yourself once in the middle of that, which was amazing.
Here's the punchline. Like right to the top here. Liberal societies do not have enough glue to hold people together. Liberal societies aren't sticky enough. They're not thick enough.
Agree. Well, thank you for joining our show today.
We're using Francis Fukuyama's recent article in Foreign Affairs as a jumping off point to this. So liberal society, important
from
to define
magazine?
This, Foreign Affairs.
Okay.
Important to emphasize that liberal in this sense is not the opposite of conservative. A liberal society is the opposite of authoritarian kinds of societies or theocratic.
Good point.
So Fukuyama says the fundamental of a liberal society is tolerance of difference and respect for individual rights. The basic idea is that in a liberal society, no one person, no one church, no one organization, no government,
no media outlet
defines what is the highest good of human life or what the highest good of human life ought to be for everyone, but aims to create the conditions where different people can pursue their different visions of the good life without killing each other. That's what a liberal society does. It says, you people can pursue different ways of fulfilling your life, different ways of conceiving meaning and purpose, and we allow different expressions of that. And so a key element of a liberal society, as Francis Fukuyama says, is tolerance. The shortcoming is how does that society hold together? How does it find a common moral core, or can it find a common moral core to hold it together? That's the critique of a liberal society.
Well, and I think we can, and I think there have been various times over history where a common narrative was being at least worked on, you know, and it was being worked on in the public square. It was being worked on in our schools. And that is the educational piece around what does it mean to be a citizen of a liberal society? Because without that part of the conversation, we're never going to agree. It's not like there's a point we're going to get to and then the conversation will be over, because I think to be a citizen of a liberal society is constantly evolving, right? As the world around us changes and we have to change in response to it. But a conversation taking place by the leaders of a liberal society in the public square, a conversation that is initiated, you know, among our youngest citizens in school, conversations about what does it mean to be a good and responsible citizen of a liberal society, because in the absence of that conversation, you wind up where we are today, right? Where you've got a whole bunch of people just sort of running hither and yon, and there's not even a distant light around which the moths may flutter. You know, there's just abject darkness out there. I mean, there's nothing, you know, to draw us in or draw us together. And so now even truth itself has fallen apart, because the very leaders of our country who are supposed to be leading this conversation, you know, whether in dialogue or by living it in some way, shape, or form, have absolutely gone around the bend.
Yeah, I wrote as a note for today's conversation, we've lost the ability to talk about the aim of our collective human life. And that void is filled with all kinds of diabolical ideologies. So you point to, I think you and I are both old enough to remember American civil religion as it was taught to us. I mean, that was the glue that was aiming to bind this liberal society, and it doesn't anymore. And there are good reasons for that, because the story is intended to be broadened and widened and inclusive and more inclusive. Do you agree with the way that Fukuyama frames the weakness of a liberal society?
Say again?
Do you agree with Fukuyama's way of framing the weakness of a liberal society? That is, it doesn't provide a vision of the end or aim of human life. And so therefore it is prone to fragmentation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's also this, when I get like into sort of my more hypercritical, when I get in touch with my frustration over liberalism, there is also this reoccurring theme where, you know, we seem to, and I say we, cause I'm in it. I mean, I'm a self-diagnosed liberal. But we consistently show up to rugby matches carrying badminton rackets. And
I think you're conflating liberals as a political party versus a liberal society.
Well, it's both and. I mean, it is both and.
But there are conservatives who want to live in a liberal society, the way Fukuyama is defining it.
Yeah, we call those old school Republicans.
Right. You know, those are
Rockefeller Republicans.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's important to note, because it's not reducible to the current food fight, which is
right.
which is idiotic and really not principled. So where do we turn for identity and belonging?
I don't think that the notion of a liberal society means we just, it's like this is a problem in Unitarian Universalism too, just to be clear, that, you know, because we don't tell people coming in what they need to believe, we're non-creedal, right? And we don't even have a common faith narrative, which means we've got people of all faiths, you know, under this big tent practicing whatever. People have come to believe over time that you can believe whatever you want to be and be a Unitarian Universalist, and that is not the case. But their thinking that has so watered down this tradition that we find ourselves here at the 21st century, and we're in big trouble. We've been all laissez-faire about all this for too long. And I think that's the argument he's making about
liberal society. I do too. And isn't it, in your example, isn't it because it's too individualistic?
Yes.
And
yes, absolutely.
And because it's so individualistic, it devolves to the lowest common denominator.
We have overvalued individualism to the point where we failed to name toxic individualism when it, you know, when we see it, when it's there. And there is, in Unitarian Universalism, our first principle is that we covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of all people. The seventh principle is we covenant to affirm and promote the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So the sort of the thinking theologians among us have said, that's the balance. There's the balance. How we balance the individual with the fact that we understand we are connected at an atomic level, at a molecular level. We are connected, and what anyone does is going to impact somebody else. So there have to be covenants. There have to be sacred agreements between us about, you know, what are the things that we value? And those things are going to change at time. We're in the process right now of, you know, trying to add an eighth principle. And
so that is how I see Fukuyama's critique of liberal society playing out in American culture at large. I think it's funny that you brought up the Unitarian Universalist because it certainly crossed my mind.
You were thinking about it, but you weren't going to say it.
Well, because it's not
gonna,
my, you know.
Right, you weren't going to throw my tradition
that's
under
not
the
my,
bus.
Yeah,
no,
that's,
let me throw my tradition under the bus.
Well,
in a healthy critique.
Exactly. It is a healthy critique, and I think it's so pertinent to the wider American society because a liberal society emphasizes individual rights and it emphasizes tolerance for difference. And that's part of its genius. Like, that's how, like Fukuyama says, we manage to hold those as values is one way to manage diversity without resorting to violence. We've gotten to the point where it's so individualized in American society now, I'm not talking about the Unitarian Church, that there's no vision of what society is for, what human beings are for. And so we just get to the default position, which is the hegemony, I think. I mean, peace, there are different ones. Here, I've interrupted myself again. One default position is just to say, let the market take care of it. We just unthinkingly give our society over to market forces. We don't think about whether a certain market outcome has value for human flourishing. We just say the market, it's a quasi-religious faith. We will just allow the markets to take care of it. All right. So that is a picture of this kind of moral vacuum, this spiritual void that is a real critique of liberal societies and how it can get filled.
Well, at this point, the market gets more care and attention than the citizens of the country.
Yeah.
And this idea that if we can just placate, if we could just, you know, if we can sacrifice enough to the gods of the market, that all will be well.
The other thing, Shana, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's some really magical thinking there.
It is. And I go back to, I also think of, you know, our conversation last fall about Tocqueville and democracy, mm-hmm. his observation that this plural society needs religion as its kind of, as its glue, as a source of unity. And so the decline, which we've charted and we know, the decline of civic engagement and all kinds of civic organizations, including
civility itself.
And, yeah.
The decline of civility itself.
The liberal society then loses, again, this spiritual guide or some kind of moral core around which people can gather. And back to the beginning, when you were talking about civics education, right, having lost that as well, which there could be many critiques of that kind of education that we experienced, mm-hmm. you know, in the 70s. But for all its faults, it was something. It was something that tried to say, okay, in this liberal society where there are diverse peoples, there is something that holds us all together. We don't have that
it
now.
It's amazing to me because, you know, in the business world, it is now pretty much a given. Get people into a room, fail quickly, so that you can get to the success, right? That we know that a certain amount of failure is necessary in any great venture. But for some reason in politics, and particularly where the history of this country is concerned, there are those who have absolutely no tolerance for the degree to which we have failed to live into the dream. And so they're just going to lie about it and say that we did, and we're going to shoot anybody who says anything different or fire them or, you know, we're not going to allow that conversation to take place, as if the citizens of this country are so inept that we couldn't possibly be inspired by past failures to now step up and to try again. You know, that we can do better. I believe we can do better. Who's holding out that hope? And there is absolutely a correlation between the decline of religion in America and the increase of incivility. There is just no question about that. But again, in a liberal society, Chris and I are not going to suggest, you know, what religion people should engage. But to be engaged with something that asks the big questions, spirituality has to be more than I have a heartbeat, okay? What is the bigger thing to which you are connected? Articulate it, think about it, work on it, stretch it out. How does it impact your life? How do you live your life in order to reflect those values? What is the purpose of being human beings? See, these are the conversations that take place in the context of spirituality and or religion. And if we're not having those conversations, then they are not being had. And they're really, you know, the earth is spinning pretty quickly. If gravity burps even once, we're done. I mean, we are all going to be flung back out into the interstellar stardust from which we came.
And I would add this, that if you want to understand a tension that is in our culture and society in the best possible light. Like, let me say parenthetically, some of the tensions in our culture are just due to craziness, psychosis. I would even say a demonic spirit. Like there's some really ugly forces at work in our culture. Okay. Put those aside for a second. If you want to understand in the best possible light a fundamental tension that is working its way through society, politics, and culture. It's this, which is people yearning for some kind of moral core, spiritual core that can hold us together as one. There are people exploiting that for mm-hmm. personal gain.
Absolutely.
And feeding really horrible stuff. So that's why I say, if you want to understand this in the best possible light, that is the Fukuyama names to me. I'd be curious what you think, Shana, but I think he names, again, in the best possible light, some real, like, this is real tension in a liberal society.
Yeah, it's real tension. It's real. And, you know, again, we should look at it and we should fold it into the mix. I don't think it's a reason to say, oh, well, see, liberal societies don't work, so let's trash it. No. But it is, again, it's another part of the truth that comes in. So once we look at that, the light is shined on that, and we go, oh, yeah, you know what? There's truth in that. So what can we do? You know, how do we shore that up? How do we respond to that? Takes us back to, you know, where we started about the, you can't, is there a truth? I don't know. I'm going to leave it to you philosophers to argue that. And even as a person of deep faith, I don't believe that whatever it is I believe, or in fact, what I experience, is the only truth.
This reminds me of one thing we used to say about our show at the beginning, which was steering between the programmatic secularists and the quasi-theocrats.
Steering a middle course between...
That's holding this tension mm-hmm. between pluralism and individual rights and the need for some kind of moral conversation, moral vision of what society is for, what human beings are for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the genius of American society, if we are to keep it for the future, is to be able to hold both of those in creative tension. And it's really going to take conversation to be able to do that.
And education. And it's not about teaching for the tests, because there's no place that you learn how to hold that dynamic tension in that process whatsoever.
Beautiful. Are we there?
We're there.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light.
Thank you all for having spent the last 26 and a half minutes with Chris Owen and Shana Appel at What in God's Name. We're so glad that you took time to join us. Go to Patreon and leave us a tip so that we can pay our amazing associate producer, Brandon, who is an awesome individual. What else we got, Chris?
Shana, so good to be with you today.
Always good to be with you, Chris.